That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome back to the show. This is, of course, your host, David Scales. Today I'm bringing you an episode of Shaping Surfing with Dane Hance. Dane Hance is a surfboard shaper, of course, and his label is Vulcan Surf. And I'm not even sure exactly how I first encountered Dane. I'm almost certain it was on Instagram. And I think maybe Ron over at Board Porn mentioned that I should interview Dane at some point. Somebody, a listener, mentioned that. And so I started following Dane, and his boards are really, really incredible. But I had never met Dane prior to recording this episode, which sometimes happens, sometimes doesn't. Sometimes I know the guys in advance. And it was interesting. I actually really liked Dane a lot. Dane, I think in the best version of myself, I would like to think of myself as being creative and intelligent, and Dane is both of those things. And so a lot of what he talked about really resonated with me, and a lot of kind of his business, the way that he runs his business, the way that he views life and work balance, and his philosophy in dealing with customers, all of it just really resonated with me. And you'll get all of that in this episode. But I just wanted to mention that I didn't know Dane prior to recording this, and I really, really enjoyed his company. And I haven't spoken to him actually since we recorded this, just a couple of exchanges of text afterwards, but I hope to maintain contact with him. Really enjoyed his company, and his boards are just incredible. So if you haven't yet seen them, you can follow him on Instagram. That's been a really good way for him to share his work. We also discuss the importance of Instagram in this conversation. But yeah, his boards are really incredible. If you need like a alternative shortboard, basically, but high performance characteristics, easy paddling power, all that sort of stuff. He's making really, really beautiful looking crafts, but by everybody's account, the boards are really incredible. So definitely give Dane a follow. Enjoy this conversation with him. You can find everything that he and I discussed in this episode on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then, of course, on Instagram at surfsplendor. Make sure to share the show with friends. That helps the show grow. You hear me say this stuff every single week. But whatever you've been doing, it's been working. The show has grown a lot. And it's been great to have recurring guests. Not only Scott Bass, of course, with Spit, but now Chaz with Grit. And then Dave Parmenter is going to be a quarterly guest as well, which I'm really looking forward to. You can always send feedback about those episodes or questions that you want those guys to answer, conversations that you want us to have. And I'll make sure to implement that in future shows. All right. Until then, enjoy this episode of Shaping Surfing with Dane Hance. This is David Scales. I'll be back at the end to sign us off. Thanks. We'll be right back. I'll actually start the conversation with Instagram, because I think you're a guy who's really benefited from that whole world. And I guess also from the success of board porn, right? Like Ron over there has really embraced your work. And what's the experience been like with Instagram for you? Like, what are the pros and cons of it? And do you like it?
Well, you know, I love it. And there's been tremendous benefit to running the business and helping establish Vulcan's, you know, awareness and what we do. I haven't found any other way that's been so effective and efficient in getting your name out there, not just domestically but globally, as Instagram. And I mean, it's essentially free, so
yeah,
that's amazing. It's really cool too, because and if you like taking photos and you like producing quality content, you can really take your time and, orchestrate everything in a way that presents your product, in an ideal light, which is awesome.
I was going to ask you, who's responsible for the photography?
I am.
You are? Okay. Because not only are the boards beautiful, but, like, the photography itself is great. Like, the lighting's killer. All the compositions are killer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy doing it. And, It's funny because spring is, for a number of reasons, is my least favorite time of year. And one of the main reasons is because you can't take good photos. It's always so gloomy and there's never good lighting. So it's always a bummer. Plus the fact you end up, if you do get good light, you know, it's always late in the evening. So, you know, 12, 13 hour days are pretty common. But, you know, it really is worth it. I mean, if you're going to present yourself, I think you might as well, you know, do it in the best possible light you can.
Literally.
So, yeah, it's awesome. There's a lot of negatives, too, though. But going back real quick to Ron at Board Porn, it's pretty amazing. He's really been an advocate, not just for myself and Vulcan, but for a number of shapers who otherwise probably never would have seen the light of day or gotten the credibility that they've been able to establish through board porn as a vehicle. Ron is, he'll try new things and he'll experiment with boards, and everything has a legitimate shot. It's fascinating because he wasn't always that way. He was, you know, a diehard, just pointy nose stressor guy. But somewhere along the line, he kind of broadened his horizons and, you know, started getting interested in not just alternative shapes, but alternative constructions as well, which I do both. So it's kind of a good fit for both of us in terms of our friendship as well as our working relationship.
Who is he? He listens to this show, and so, like, he's tagged me and stuff, and he's messaged me, but, like, what's his backstory?
Well, he did. It's funny, because when I got your email, Ron was the first person I've talked to, and he's actually been a counselor, you know, and has given me a lot of, like, advice, and he had a lot of positive things to say about you, and I said, oh, absolutely, and you ought to check it out, and do this interview. From what I gather from Ron, he's a headhunter for attorneys in New York, who he surfs, and, you know, that's his passion, and he's interested in surfboards and everything pretty much surf related. I think it was almost surprising to him the audience that he was able to create with board porn, and it's consistently grown. So it's cool because you get folks from across the strata, not just surfers, but, you know, people that just like cool things, or they like surf culture, or even, you know, alternative construction. It's rad.
I'm shocked at how well his Instagram has done.
It's surprising,
you know. I mean, it's not, he's curating obviously the best stuff from across the web, so it's not surprising from that standpoint. I'm just surprised how many people care about surfboards, I guess, because it's not just like, I mean, it is Kelly Slater and Surfer Magazine and all the main surf related Instagram accounts that are following him, but it's everybody. It's just random Joe Schmoes who don't even surf who are interested in the craft and the visuals and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so that part's been surprising to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up an important point, and that's curating. And one of the things I found that Ron has done is that he does actively curate his page And I think that's really important. I can't stand rude behavior, and you see a lot of it on Instagram. And, you know, my policy is, like, you never ought to say something to somebody over the internet that you wouldn't say right to their fucking face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Ron is, and if you have a page on Instagram, I constantly have to curate mine. For every post that, you know, we have, there's one or two comments that, I mean, they're beyond just negative comments. A lot of them are just downright mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron's been really good at that. He really, he takes care, and he kind of weeds a lot of stuff out. And it's cool. People are allowed to express their ideas without being abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard when, you know, honestly, like being a creative person, you know, people always say, well, you got to have thick skin, and you got to, dude, I got plenty thick skin. But the issue is that if you're really a creative person, creative inspiration is like a vapor. It's there for like a little while, and then it vanishes. And it's anything other than a whisper can just blow it away. And if, you know, the wrong word in your ear can really steer the course of your creative ambition.
Hmm.
So you have to be careful with that. And I guess, I don't know, maybe I am a little sensitive, but it's harsh, especially in the surf industry. I found, maybe broader than the surf industry, surf culture, it's an extraordinarily prejudiced. There's a lot of judgment. And you see that. Now, I've seen it, and I've heard it. So that can be kind of tough.
Interesting. Know? I think maybe this is similar to what you're talking about. There seems to be just like a boys' club, too.
Very much.
Where it's like, if you're in it, you're in it. And if you're outside of it, it's not intending to be prejudiced. It's just, well, you're not on the inside. So, and I'm not sure how you bridge that gap sometimes, how you get on the inside, you know?
Just, I don't think you really can.
Yeah.
I've never been in a cool guy club. I've never been in a clique. And
well, it's the same old guys being interviewed over and over in the magazines or the mainstream media. But I think that's what the internet, with board porn or with the podcast or whatever, it's democratized who's in and who's out.
Definitely. You're all kind of like on a level playing field.
Yeah.
And that's awesome, because then people can see and then judge for themselves. Wow, hey, that's awesome. Or, wow, I don't know, it didn't mm-hmm. do it for me.
I like what you were saying about the creative energy just being a vapor. I totally agree. And haven't really thought of it that way before. And I think that I have maybe undervalued that vapor a little bit and think like, oh, it's okay, it'll come back. But you're right, it won't. Or if it does, it won't be when you're feeling this particular way on this given day with this thing to say.
It's exactly. And like, I've always found that, like, if you have creative inspiration, like, you have to act on it immediately.
Right.
Because it wanes. It waxes and it wanes. And yeah, that's important. So yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So you have to be very wary of who you spend your time with or what energy you're kind of being exposed to. And
yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, surrounding yourself with people that are supportive, like, and like-minded, definitely helps. And I'm fortunate to have a really good circle of friends that I think we're all kind of like, you know, I guess misfits, that, you know, we're cohesive in that way. Yeah, but they're very supportive, and I support them. And, you know, the surf industry has been, like, the landscape has been kind of a nightmare scape for quite a while now. And from my friends to my crew that work here, I kind of feel like we've all been, like, on the same, like, leaky lifeboat.
Right.
Going through this, you know, this storm. And it's caused us to all be, you know, pretty close-knit, which is awesome. Because the people, I don't work with anybody that's not a friend. And I feel like we're supportive of one another in that way. So it's pretty cool.
Can you, how long have you been in it? How long have you been building boards?
You know, I've built boards on and off all my life. Not just surfboards. I know everything from snowboards to surfboards to skateboards to race engines. Later on, CAD CAM. So just building things. I mean, even my own houses, too. So fabrication, construction, design and build is something that's always been a constant in my life. So on and off, I've built boards, not always good ones. I wasn't really even serious about Vulcan until I think 2012.
Oh, okay.
Let's
back up actually a little bit. Prior to building, how did you just get involved in surfing itself? Did you grow up surfing?
Yeah, so I was born in Northern California. I was born in San Mateo, and we lived there until I was about six. And then at that time, we moved to Southern California, and we moved to Point Doom in Malibu. And we had access right to Point Doom, and Little Doom was right there, and that was where I grew up. I mean, not just surfing, but playing in the water, fishing, body surfing, like boogie boarding. The whole deal was really an idyllic childhood.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We had a lot, and we lived in was essentially a garage. But I mean, when you're a kid, that doesn't really matter. It's more about the environment, and it was an awesome environment. I mean, I would give up 5 years on the end of my life to have 1 year back.
Really?
Yeah, in the 80s.
Wow.
Absolutely, without a doubt, if I could recapture that.
I mean, that's a incredible little area that's like people who've been to LA have no idea that that even exists.
They don't. Yeah, and it is. It's its own little microcosm.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was interesting. You know, the people and the characters and the celebrities. And
yeah.
It was awesome. I remember Sean Penn and Madonna were married like three doors down on the point.
What?
From my dad's place. It was crazy. I remember that day.
Wow.
Bruce Jenner, like, riding his sporty down like the, PCH, popping wheelies.
What?
Yeah, it was nuts. There's so many things that have changed, dude. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
Strider lives there now.
Yeah.
And, like, Reef McIntosh, I've been to his place up there.
That's crazy.
I know.
That's rad to hear that they've done, like, so well that, like, they could do that. You know, honestly,
Strider's wife's a real estate agent in Malibu, so I think that helps.
That's definitely got to help, yeah. Thank goodness for the wife, man. A lot of times they really pull the weight. That's cool.
In the surf industry, they have to. Nobody's making money in the surf industry.
Yeah, you really do. So that's cool.
So you grew up there surfing and...
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, that was just kind of like what you did, it was just the way it was. And it was totally cool. It was part of, like, just the environment. I went to Malibu Park Junior High, and it was cool. A lot of times we just did school and body surfed at Zuma Beach, and it was awesome. Yeah.
Very cool. You talked about working with your hands a lot in manufacturing and fabrication. When you decided to kind of take board building seriously, did you work under anybody? Did you have any mentors who were inspirational to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I learned a lot from different people, different laminators. Learned a lot from Javier at XTR and Epoxy Pro, and his laminator Pato, who's probably one of the most gifted, not just laminators but composite laminators in the industry, and also just a really good person. So learned a lot from Pato, and I'd say various people over the years, but a lot of those things that I know are honestly self-taught. I'm not like a super social person, and I've always tried to rely like on myself.
Okay.
For my own way of doing things, and I think that reflects in not just my boards, but in my business philosophy as well. Like, we rely on no one. I mean, if it's not made here in my factory under this roof, I don't do it. So that's with the exception of blank fabrication from U.S., obviously, but we've even done a fair amount of, like, hot wire and billet EPS, and fabricating our own blanks. That's tough, though, because we just don't really have a space for it. But I've always tried to just really rely on myself, do things my own way, kind of, like, focus on what I'm doing. And I think you see that a lot in Vulcan, because if there's one thing I consistently hear is people say, wow, there's nothing like your boards. I've never seen anything like that. They're just totally different. And so I think that's a good thing. It's almost, I think of like Australia, the way things have evolved there. You've got all sorts of weird creatures that kind of evolved in isolation, you know, in strange and wonderful ways. And I think there's a lot of value in that because, again, if you have creative inspiration and you look at it like a vapor, it's very easy to pollute that idea or to change the course of your thinking or your creativity. So it's important to protect that.
You said that customers say that the boards are unique. What are you building?
So I do, in terms of construction or in terms of shapes?
We're going to break it all down.
Okay. So, you know, in terms of construction, one of the things that inspired me early on was that, you know, we've kind of seen the same construction technology in the surf industry over the decades. And, you know, it works, absolutely. It's incredible. But, you know, we're also relying on going on 50-plus-year-old antiquated technology. And there's other ways of doing things. There's other ways of building boards. And that was something that was always really intriguing to me. In coming up with different constructions, whether it was, you know, poly or epoxy. I've worked with polyurea, different polyurethanes, all sorts of things. I was never really bound to any one thing. So, and I think that's important because I know there's a lot of, again, prejudice. People say, oh, epoxies are terrible or, oh, this and that. But I don't operate within those constraints. So I've always been free to kind of just do my own thing.
The industry is notoriously slow to adapt new tech, basically.
It's incredibly, incredibly slow. And surfers are, by and large, they're very conservative.
Right. I agree.
And they're also very nostalgic, too.
Yep.
And that can be challenging. I can remember, you know, when I first started coming out with some of my stringerless epoxy constructions, there was a lot of acrimony. Whereas now, like you're definitely seeing way more alternative constructions in epoxy. I think it's awesome. It's really cool. So,
explain to listeners exactly what construction materials you're using. You said obviously EPS and epoxy.
Yeah.
What else you got going on the boards?
Yeah. You know, we do. Let's see. Like convex construction is EPS and epoxy.
What is convex?
So convex is a stringerless construction, whereas the shell of the board provides structural integrity through the use of corrugation.
Got it.
It's a monocoque construction. And, you know, there's a number of benefits over using a traditional wood stringer. And it's one of the only ways I know of to simultaneously increase the structural integrity of any material without adding more shit in.
It's actually reducing, right? You're eliminating foam.
Exactly. You're eliminating foam. And it by adding corrugation, you exponentially increase the strength-to-weight ratio.
Right.
For, you know, I always use the analogy of corrugated metal roofing. The sheet metal that's used for a corrugated roof is very flimsy. But when it's corrugated, there again, you've increased the strength of the material. I know of no other way, no more efficient way to increase the structural integrity of anything than corrugation. And a lot of people have looked at the convex boards, and it, you know, I think at first blush, you know, there's two things they think: one, it's ornamental, or two, you know, Stretch did it back way back when. It's not a grab rail, and grab rails are cool; they feel great. But, you know, they don't really increase the structural integrity of the board like a full corrugation does. And I can show you that. Matter of fact, you see that tape measure that's right here?
So for the listeners, it's basically the corrugation is just along the rail line, maybe an inch inset from the rail or 2 inches?
It's about an inch and a quarter in. It's in a parabolic configuration.
Got it.
It's widest and deepest at the point load area of the board, like in the middle where the majority of the stress is, and then it's tapered towards the nose and tail to allow those areas to flex more independently.
Got it.
And what I was going to illustrate to you is, like, just taking a tape measure. you know, these are curved, and imagine that this is like a single grab rail.
Yep.
And it's positioned on the board right here on the deck. There's not a lot, you know, if you press on it this way, if the point load is this way, but if you flip it over.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the principle of convex, and that's why I went so far out of my way, is to try and patent it. And I don't know if that was really a good idea or not, business-wise, I'm not sure. But I was very proud of the idea, and it is, it's very valid. I've done thousands of convex boards that have gone to real serious places, the Maldives. Marty Allen had one that he surfed for like 3 months straight at Snapper Rocks. He had said like there was plenty of circumstances where the board should have snapped, but it didn't. As a matter of fact, we have yet to see one break.
Wow.
So I've seen a lot of stringerless technologies out there, and I've even started a dossier of broken stringerless boards. So I've seen a lot of stuff that I don't think is really a good design. This is definitely one of them. And it's, people look at it and they think, you know, it's oh, wow, it's really techy or whatnot. Corrugation is actually a natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And you see it everywhere in nature.
Yeah.
Anywhere a material needs structural integrity. So it's pretty amazing.
I've always thought, like, the simplest way to explain it is, like, if you just had a flat piece of paper, just a thin sheet of paper,
right,
you could easily flex it and bend it. If you just put a crease down the center and then try to bend the paper.
There you go.
Yeah. It strengthens it,
yeah.
You know?
You ever see, like, palm fronds?
Yeah.
I did a post on that on Instagram so people could kind of understand what the principle was. Palm fronds are corrugated, and it's one of the few leaves that will withstand hurricane forces. It's amazing.
Super simple.
Yeah, so it's simple. So it's efficient. It's weird looking, but it does work.
But all the best design is simple and efficient.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So.
I've also done epoxy over poly, which I really like. It's the Fusion Drive, which is actually a hybrid lamination. So that's an amalgam of epoxy and polyester resins. And I've worked with some other things that I think they're really cool materials, and I think they could have value, but there's still some development that needs to happen there.
Yeah.
But there are things that that could be even superior to both and less toxic too.
Let's talk about what does superior even mean? Are we talking about just the extending the life of the board itself?
It really depends. It really depends, like, on the surfer, the conditions, and how they surf. It's, you know, I'll have people that will ask, well, I want an indestructible board. I just want it to last forever. Well, it's, you know, yeah, I can do that. It's going to be a piece of shit, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you can make boards pretty tough. But I always find that there's like an inverse relationship between, you know, not just longevity, but, you know, as well as weight. So those can be things that you need to balance. I mean, I like epoxies and EPS construction if conditions are ideal. If it's smooth and it's glassy, they just feel incredible. And they've got a lot of spring. EPS is, you know, when it flexes, it, you know, stores a lot of potential energy, and then it rebounds and recoils real hard. Plus the fact of having the lightweight, it's like wherever you put your front foot, the nose of that board is already there. So it's pretty cool. But when you get into, you know, textured conditions or offshore, that can be really challenging. And for the average surfer, that can equate to like a lot more management that they might otherwise be used to if they were surfing like a poly board.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that I've learned along the way too is just that, you know, light isn't always better.
Okay.
You know, and you can make boards stupid light to the point where they lack drive and they're unstable. So a good way of looking at it is like, the law, you know, it was funny. I went on this really bizarre kick of making like the lightest board. It was like this journey to get there, and I finally got there, and I found out it sucked. It didn't work. It was cool to like show your friends, you know, and like have people pick it up and go, "Wow, this thing's so light, it's insane." But you take it out and surf it, and it's like, yeah, it's not that great, man. And that's tough because, like, as a, is not just a shaper, but as a board builder and a developer, like, you have to be really honest with yourself. And does this thing really work? Does it meet the objectives that I set out to establish or to achieve? You got to be totally honest. Does it work or does it not work? So that's been interesting.
It seems like with design, not just surfboard design, but all design, designers push things to a limit, kind of figure out where the breaking point is, and then it always gets scaled back to somewhere kind of, maybe not in the middle ground, but somewhere beyond what the limit is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and, you see that like in the auto industry, I'm thinking, you know, when you see the concept cars and everybody's like, wow, it's so insane.
Yeah.
And there's the production version. It's like, well, we kind of lost something. But where surfboards are concerned, yeah, it's that can be kind of tricky. You know, when I found that out about, you know, weight and the law of inertial mass, you know, I moved on to, you know, different laminations and different, what's the word? I guess different combinations of blank as well as lamination and resin. Been able to make boards that have a good weight. They've got not just a good flex, but like good recoil and spring, because that's a huge, huge part of it. And that's one of the reasons I really like not just stringerless boards, but monocoque constructions. Is you're relying on, you know, basically the shell of the board to have your structural integrity. And when you're using composites in your lamination, like, you know, you see we use like a lot of carbons and different carbon weaves, the rate of mechanical fatigue is it's way better than a wood stringer. So, and, you know, I think everybody's had like a favorite poly board I know that I've just loved to death, and that one day when they just don't have it anymore. I've definitely found that, you know, with some of the stringerless boards and some of the complex laminations we do, incorporating the different composites, you can have boards that have like a greater life and an awesome feel too.
Yeah,
there's some bugs, but you can make some neat things. It's awesome.
So just to kind of reset for the listener exactly what you're talking about, when you talk about that inverse relationship, generally what we're dealing with surfboards is like you can make an indestructible board,
yeah,
but it's going to suffer in performance capability, obviously. Or
yeah,
you can make a super high-performance board that is lightweight maybe, but it's going to fall apart after you do one air reverse if you're a pro or whatever. So that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And, I mean, there's ways to mitigate that, obviously. But, you know, it is kind of a truth. And the other thing is like me personally, I don't want my boards to last forever, you know. I want them to have like, you know, their lifespan and get good and beat in, and they feel awesome, and, you know, it's such a good feeling. But, you know, your surfing is constantly changing. Your body mechanics and your body English is constantly changing, and what mm-hmm. might have worked for you, you know, back then, like, you have different needs. And that isn't just applicable to surfboards. It's applicable to, like, your fins as well. So, you know, I've gone back and surfed old boards that, you know, I remember at one time I thought, oh, this is, you know, this is the pinnacle of what I can do, and gone back and surfed them and found out that, like, wow, you know, my surfing has evolved. So your needs change. So I'm always kind of wanting to move on and move forward. I don't really want those boards to last. I don't really need them to last forever.
Okay. I'm curious what your objective is then, if the boards aren't designed to last forever, or from even just from like a performance standpoint, what is the objective with the boards that you're building? You're obviously making alternative shape short boards, I would say, is kind of how I would define what you're doing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's your ambition?
My ambition is to, I really focus, on, you know, fishes, planing hulls, and step downs. I would say that that's like the majority of what I do and where I've had success. I try and make boards for guys like myself, you know. We surf in Southern California. We don't have island-type waves.
Yeah.
Boards that got to paddle good. They got to paddle great, because not only are you dealing with, you know, a weaker wave, but you're also surfing against a very aggressive crowd. So, you know, those things are important. Speed, obviously, is, man, you learn so much about what makes a board fast in San Diego, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you'll know if a board is fast or if it isn't. And I've made some turds where, you know, I've tried some different things and they immediately get eliminated from the gene pool.
Yeah.
Because I need them to be fast. I need them to paddle fast. I'm not the lightest surfer in the water. So, you know, most of my boards, I would say, accommodate guys that want to surf performance boards in a smaller format. But, you know, they're a little bit larger than, like, the average kid. I don't focus on kids at all.
Oh, okay.
Really. So it's kind of like just refined down to that. I found that those three things, like the fishes, the planing hulls, and the step downs, are really accommodate what I want to accomplish for, you know, myself as well as the guys that buy my boards. And I typically find that they're guys like me, you know?
Yeah. When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
So, yeah.
The boards, they look like spaceships. Like, they look futuristic. And they look like they would deliver on everything you just said in terms of paddleability and speed. Question I always have is, like, there seems to be so many variables that are hard to track.
Yeah.
In the design, firstly, but then also every wave that you ever surf is different. Yeah. So it seems very hard to actually objectively define how a board will flex. For example, like we've talked about, surfers are traditionally conservative and not apt to change. And I think that is partially because of those things. It's like, look, I know what a center stringer will feel like in a polyurethane blank, and I know how it'll flex. And so I just want to refine that process from my 6.6 down to my 6.4 or yeah, whatever. And the boards you're doing have multiple stringers and glue lines and construction. So
right. And yeah, and I get that with people. It's like it's very easy to understand, like, you know, the average surfer who's, you know, he's working and, you know, we've all got bills and expenses and things like that. Dude, it's really hard to plunk down, you know, that money for something that may or looks so weird as, like, some of the boards do. So I get that. I mean, it's a huge leap of faith sometimes. for a guy to deviate from the norm, you know, and the accepted standard, something he knows is going to work.
Yeah.
Versus something that's really maybe experimental. So I really appreciate and applaud the people that have taken the leap and given the boards a shot. It reminds me, we need to do more demos, really. That's something that I know I've been meaning to do for quite a while, just so people could see and go, wow, they really do work.
Do you end up with used boards for that purpose? Like, do you have your own boards that you make available used?
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, they go immediately. I mean, as soon as I post something, like, they're gone. Like, we had 8 boards. They were all demos and such that, you know, we didn't have a specific set demo. People would come into the factory and just try something and bring it back. But, yeah, they get sold very quickly.
Well, let me ask you, talking about all the variables that we're trying to control for.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead if you have something.
It's very nebulous.
Yes.
It's extraordinarily nebulous. Like, what works, what didn't work? And I feel like you really don't know that until you've made multiple iterations of the same board.
Right.
That, I don't think there's any one way, any more effective way of isolating what's working or what isn't working. And I've done that with nearly all of my boards, and I go through a lot of them. So, you know, let's say I'll have, like, I don't know, a Tomahawk. I was on, like, a 5.7 Tomahawk for a long time and building the exact same board, incrementally changing things and seeing how it would work. You know, I'm really big too on, like, ripping out thin boxes and resetting them. So I've done that, you know, maybe 3-4 times on a single board to see how things are working, how this will affect the way it turns, how it's going to affect drive. Then rebuilding the boards in different constructions. This one's in convex. This one's in fusion drive. This one's just a stringered epoxy. This one's a stringered poly. And you can see how they all perform. But to try and venture a guess as to, you know, what one single thing is doing on a board, you know, with just the board as well as the surf conditions constantly changing.
Exactly.
It's almost impossible. You don't know until you've really surfed them and shaped them and built them. I think that's why I've had a lot of success with Vulcan too is you know, I'm not just a shaper, which especially nowadays, I think that's a romantic idea. And I don't think that the idea of just a shaper alone even exists anymore.
Yeah.
I think you've got to be able to do it all. You've got to surf, you've got to shape, you've got to laminate, you've got to sand, you've got to, like, set fins, you've got to foil fins. Like, you got to know it all. You really got to bring it, you know?
Yeah.
But I think if you have that, you have a tremendous advantage over just a shaper alone. You have, like, the acumen to ascertain, you know, exactly, you know, what's going on. You know exactly how the board was built. So there's no question in your mind. Unless you've built that board multiple times and you've surfed it yourself, there's no way of knowing. I heard recently of a really well-known shaper, and they were asking him questions about a specific board in his lineup. And he had said that he had never surfed it. I thought that was the most incredible statement I had ever heard.
Shocking.
It was shocking. Why would I even buy that board if you can't speak firsthand?
Yeah.
That's an incredible statement.
Yeah. I talked to shapers who are like, oh, I haven't surfed in 10 years, but they're still building boards, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is interesting.
You know what I actually like hearing you say is, I'm asking you how do we isolate these variables and see how they perform? And you saying it's impossible. I find most people trying to argue that they can identify and isolate those variables and objectively define how certain design characteristics work. And I know that there are hydrodynamic principles that are objective, but there's too many variables. And so I felt like, just from looking at your boards, I felt like you were an engineer, but from talking to you, you're much more of a creative than I think you are an engineer.
It's an amalgam of all principles. I believe that the ultimate board, I mean, what I strive for is, you know, a board that's built well, it surfs well, and it looks fantastic. because I'm big on biofeedback. I think if something looks cool, like, you know, it feels good, and mm-hmm. you're more apt to have confidence in it. But it's got to be hitting on all levels. It's got to be built well. It's got to be designed well.
Sure.
All those things have to be in place. And, yes, I totally agree. If it's too nebulous to try and narrow it down unless you build the exact same board and change something so you know exactly what that one thing is, I'm dubious that you could ever isolate what one thing is having an effect on your shape.
Even in that example you just gave, it still isn't equivalent because you're surfing it on a different day.
Absolutely.
Or you might even be surfing it the same day, but the conditions change all the time. And you're fatigued as the surfer when you take the second board out compared to the first.
I had a funny misadventure that is kind of relevant to this conversation. That I had a session one day. I made a board that had, it was a short board. It was a 5.8. It was a Pantera. And I had taken the tail rocker. It had this really exaggerated flip on the back end. And I was surfing. I surfed suckouts and I surfed Ponto. It was real steep. And it was over the course of a week that we had really good swell. And I had some of the most phenomenal sessions. They were just so incredible. It was so memorable that it changed the course of my design principles for like a solid year.
Wow.
And what I found was that design feature, that accelerated rocker out the back end, it only worked for that narrow bandwidth of swell.
Oh my gosh.
I found in every other conditions, it sucked. It just didn't work. And it was so hard. And that goes back to like what I was saying before. If you're a board builder, not just a shaper, you're a board builder, you've got to be brutally honest with yourself. You really do. It requires that. Does this thing work? Or is it a case of, well, it doesn't not work? That's not good enough. It's definitely not good enough for a board that I expect somebody to pay money for.
Yeah.
It's got to work in the broadest range of conditions possible, not just that one, you know, big Wednesday or that, oh, that awesome swell where it was glassy and offshore and mid-tide, whatever. That can be tricky.
It's funny. As you were talking about it, I was like, it's almost akin to music, where it's kind of like, I can't just say, oh, I like bass guitar, and then listen to every song that has bass guitar and go, oh, I like that because it has bass guitar. It's that in some songs, it works great, and in some, when I'm in a certain mood, maybe, I want classical, and when I'm in a different mood, I want rock and roll. It only is applicable at different times in your life, and you can't actually isolate the variables of a song, or even a critic can't even say, this is what makes a good song, this construction.
Yeah.
It's just, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you know?
It's funny you said bass, because I've been listening to Royal Blood. I just downloaded like their last album. It's insane. It's just drums and the guy on bass, and he runs his bass through multiple pedals, and it's just got this incredible, like huge but crisp, gritty sound. It's rad. If you haven't heard it, It's fucking awesome. It's like racing a semi-truck around Laguna Seca or something. It's just got the coolest sound. I love that. So anyways, weird segue.
No, but seriously, that it's relevant because it's like that has a time and a place. And I think that it's hard to explain to non-surfers, maybe the women, you know, in our lives where it's like, hey, I need 30 surfboards. And they're just like, what? What, you know, different one for each day of the month? But
well, yeah, you can't shoot the whole course, right? With the pitching wedge, man.
It's no.
Like, yeah, you definitely need different boards. But I try and focus, like, you know, on my designs as well as the constructions and boards that will handle the, you know, broadest range of wave types and conditions. I really like, I know when I have a really good board, when it performs so well that I'm willing to take it into circumstances that it's absolutely not designed for and still have, like, you know, a reasonable amount of success. That's when I know that it's a really good design. That's a winning combination. Yeah.
Can you explain where, I mean, I'm curious about the business of the surf business. I think a lot of listeners don't fully understand how it works. Explain where we're at, what the business of Vulcan is, and, you know, what are the challenges with doing what you're doing? Because, like, let me break it down real quick, or maybe prep you. Like, what you're doing requires a tremendous amount of R&D.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of like you need to build boards, surf them, figure out before you're willing to put it out in the public. But I think traditionally the way this business has been built is very thin profit margins where everybody gets a bro deal.
Yeah.
And so guys come in here and they're just like, you know, my buddy recommended it. Can I get a deal? And so you can't actually do the R&D when you're running on those thin margins. So talk about the business of Vulcan.
Well, I'm glad you asked that because it's very relevant to, you know, our success. And, you know, as I mentioned to you, that we rely on nobody, and it's really been beneficial to us because we do everything ourselves, so our margins are greater. If I was just a shaper who was dropping my shape off at the glass shop, I know guys that do this, and I don't know how they even do it because you're just not – you're trading dollars.
The wife works.
Well,
that's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. The wife, where she's the realtor. But it doesn't – yeah, that's it's incredible. And I think that there's a huge misconception. Like, and I try and, like, educate a lot of people about this. There's a difference between – cash flow and profitability.
Absolutely.
So, and a lot of surfers are not business people, and they get those two principles mixed up. You can have a lot of movement, and you can trade a lot of dollars, and not be any farther down the road than you were 5, 10 years ago,
yep,
20 years ago. And the road to Oceanside is paved with the dried husks of all the people that came and went and didn't make it in the Valley of Broken Dreams.
Yep.
Margins are really thin. That's why when I said earlier, I think that the romantic notion of just the shaper alone is dead. I know from running this business and building boards and selling them, you got to be able to do everything, dude. And one day I can be doing shaping, glassing, setting fins, accounting, baking, fucking whatever it takes.
Sweeping,
you know? The other thing that, you know, but if you can do that, you really, you know, you save yourself. You know, you're just, I guess, like the sweat equity, you know, of building boards. And I wouldn't have it any other way because I want to build my boards. I mean, aside from, like, you know, loving surfing, I love building boards. It's stupid, but it's almost like Forrest Gump when he mowed the lawns even after he was a billionaire. Like,
right.
He just did it because he liked doing it. And I do this because I like doing that. And I think that's, you have to have that mindset, especially now where the margins are thin and the competition is insane. It weeds out a lot of the weak hands. And what's left is the people that really deserve to be here because they're the ones that would have done it if they made money or they didn't.
Yeah.
I think you have to understand that. And I don't try... I don't want to build a lot of boards. We're probably like between 5 and 6 boards a week right now.
Okay.
And I don't really have any ambition to go beyond that. There's an inverse relationship between inventory and price. And you're, dude, go up to Huntington and look at just the sea of short boards. It's insane. There is only so much surf shit you're going to cram down the gullet of the community. We don't need any more boards. We don't need hordes of Vulcans even.
Yeah.
What we do need is we need really good boards. We need like unique boards. We need unique technology. And really, it's the only way I can see to make any money in this game. Check it out. If you're going to go out to dinner, would you order a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? You fucking wouldn't. You can make it at home.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? You wouldn't. And to tell you quite honestly, like the average shade tree guy, and there's a lot of them now, they build their own boards at home. They can build it. It's well within the capability of the average person. And that's awesome. But when it comes to running a business, why would you strive to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Now, If we're talking about filet mignon, all right, well, now it's a horse of a different color. This takes special products, takes special equipment, it takes special training in order to do that. And if you want it, you must pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize that. So I try and build incredible boards. I try and build like things that are really unique. I try and build things that, you know, aren't just ornamental, but they hit the three things I talk about. They're built well. They're designed well. They look fantastic. You got to hit it. You got to bring it on all those areas. Otherwise, you're just another drop in the bucket, and we don't need any more of that. You gotta. The other thing is too is like when you've done that, you really have to believe in yourself. And that means quantifying your worth. What are you going to charge for this fucking board? I'm seeing all these guys out here, and it's prostitution of the industry where they're making these boards and they're selling them for $300 on Craigslist. Let me tell you something. If Instagram was the benefactor of the surf industry, Craigslist, dude, I mean, it's insane.
It's the worst.
It's the worst. Why would you do that? And I've confronted people in the water.
Have you?
Oh, you bet.
Shapers?
You bet. Absolutely. And I think it's incumbent upon anybody who's in this business and cares about it to do the same.
Yeah.
You want to talk about localism? Dude, that's like, this is my livelihood. $300? You got to be kidding.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's insane. You know, I do millwork and design and scan for a lot of people. In the business, and there's a lot of people I just will not work with. I will not support that. I will not be a part of it.
It's interesting. I think that there is the market is growing on both sides. Like, I think that there's more and more $300 boards. Like, Walmart is busier than ever,
yeah.
But at the same time, the artisanal furniture manufacturer is busier than ever. I mean, maybe the middle's going away. You know, it's like $300 boards on one end and $1,000 boards on the other end.
I think the middle is going away. And like I said earlier, it's shaking out the weak hands. It's thinning the herd.
Yeah.
And what will, you know, there always will be a place for the top 3%. There's always going to be a place for the guys that, you know, that really have something special. You know, the guys that are just, you know, like the also-rans, or they're not demanding what they're worth in terms of a price point. I'm hoping that they're going to go away. You know, I'm hoping that we'll be left with more of the people that really deserve to be there. You know, but it's also too, like, you have to look at it, like the sales model is changing also. There's things that are going to exacerbate that idea of like the middle ground disappearing. A lot of people we know are changing the way that they shop.
Yeah.
And I was just let's see. Let me look something up here. Give me one second.
Take your time.
So, you know, as far as like the middle ground disappearing and factors in the market and the way that people shop having an effect on that. I mean, check this out. I'm not going to say who this is, but what do you think that this is going to do?
Oh, yeah.
To the shops when that is back in inventory?
Yeah.
Okay, so all the people that have jumped on board with this, you know, taking advantage of insane consignment terms and, you know, like this big free ride, what do you think is going to happen to these guys when this thing is back in stock?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dane, by the way, for listeners, Dane's showing me his phone, a surfboard available on Amazon. So
it's Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was looking at one of these Amazon Prime facilities. It's actually down by one of the surfboard manufacturers in Carlsbad. And it's incredible. This is a new business model. Not only do they deliver these products, but they'll warehouse it for the manufacturer, too. They will warehouse your product and deliver it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you something, they can do it 1,000 times more efficiently than, you know, than you can in your business. It's insane. The trucks are just flying out of there.
Oh, yeah. They'll store it for you, drop ship it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So, I mean, that's something that's really going to have an impact. And we have yet to see what the long-term ramifications are of that business model, how it's going to affect us.
Well, one thing I'm concerned about for you is like a classic limitation with small business and doing the things the way that you're talking about doing them by yourself, blah, 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 is just burnout.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So how do you mitigate that? How do you maintain high quality product, all that stuff, without getting burned out?
It's really easy. I'm a surfer first. I'm a businessman second. The end of story.
It's your therapy session.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why else, you know, I would do this. And like for those guys that you say that, you know, I haven't surfed in 10 years, the guy, the shapers that don't even surf anymore, that'd be really tough, man. I mean, I get really anxious when I'm shaping boards now, and like people, customers are calling, oh, I'm leaving for my trip. Is my board ready? And this and that. Well, fuck, I want to go surf, you know? So my business model of super high quality, super unique, low volume, high price works out nicely for me because it really vets my clients, you know, it narrows them down to like a real specific guy. That's the person who I want to build boards for. And it also allows me to manage like my workload and my burnout level, you know, cause yeah, you know, we all get there, but yeah, being a surfer first and then a businessman, I think, you know, I've got my priorities straight, and that definitely helps me, over the long haul.
How long did it take you to figure out that balance?
Took me a long time, honestly. And it's weird. I didn't really begin to understand like how I work as an, and it sounds like such a stupid statement, but
it's a lifelong thing. Man.
It's a lifelong thing. And I probably not until my mid thirties did I really begin to understand how do I work? Like what makes me happy? What makes me sad? What makes me depressed? One of the things that I know like made me real depressed was my susceptibility to being a workaholic.
Yep.
You know, you get carried away. Like I was saying earlier, you get like a creative inspiration. And I have a habit of taking things to almost illogical extremes, you know. And sometimes you need somebody to step in and say, whoa, dude, let's, you know, ease up on the throttle here. And,
yeah,
you know, because I would find that, you know, you get home at like 10 o'clock at night and like, dude, no restaurants are open. There's nothing to eat. And you come back to like a quiet house and it's depressing.
Yeah.
You know, and then you kind of have to step back and go, whoa, what am I doing here?
Yep.
So beginning to understand like how you work is really important to managing your longevity, I think, in any business.
Yeah.
Not just surfboard manufacturing.
Yeah, you lose the plot sometimes.
Yeah, you lose. That's exactly it. You lose the plot.
It's like the whole reason why I'm here doing what I'm doing. If I'm not able to give it my best, if I'm not able to give the relationships in my life the best version of me and Vulcan the best design insight and all that sort of stuff, then there's no point at all.
No. You know? Yeah.
I've struggled with a lot of the same stuff. Spreading myself too thin and not enjoying it and all that sort of stuff. But I agree with you. I think surfing, as, I don't know, hokey as that sounds, it is kind of the solution.
No,
you know?
Exactly. It's like it's almost like a worn-out platitude, but you know it does really help. I mean, it is very therapeutic.
Yeah.
That can be tough too, though. Like even, you know, especially in Southern California, we all know that there's like a duality that exists with surfers. The notion, I think, for outside people is that they're, you know, really easygoing. And we know that, you know, surfers are extraordinarily territorial. They can be very aggressive, you know, and very confrontational. So, yeah, that can be tough, too.
Yeah. But I've reset an affirmation recently, which is just, like, surf every day.
Yeah.
You know, and it might not end up being every day, but it's, like, the reason why I set that is I wake up and I think of my laundry list of things to do, and surfing gets put on the back burner unless the waves are pumping.
Yeah.
So, and then it got even worse where it's like, well, the waves are actually, they're swell, but the wind's funky, or they're swell, but it's the wrong direction, or they're swell, but it's the wrong tide. So I'm making all these qualifications to basically not surf.
Right.
And so the new affirmation is just like, hey, it actually doesn't matter if the waves are good at all. Just get in the water.
Yeah.
Get in the sunlight. Feel the cold water. And if you get a 1 foot wave, great. If you get a good wave, great. It's just the ritual of going through it that actually informs the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah, it's really awesome that way. And just staying, and whether you get waves or not, just being out in the ocean, I think feeling,
yes,
being in it and being connected with it is, yeah, in and of itself, that can be very important. I know, like, when I travel, like, if I travel to surf, my days of show up and blow up are, like, long behind me.
Right.
But I like to just get in the water, and you feel, like, the energy, and you feel the rhythm of things. Sometimes I don't even surf, like, first day.
I know.
And just get in the groove of things, okay? And yeah, it's like, wow, okay, now I'm feeling more in tune with my environment. Definitely my vibes are more equalized. So, yeah, I think it's important just to be out there.
It's funny. I've had to, like, redefine what surfing is, because it's not standing up on the wave and ripping anymore. It's more of what you just said.
Yeah.
It's the ritual of just getting in the water.
Right.
That's what surfing is for
yeah.
me, you know? I'm curious, you talk about you riding your boards to get the feedback, the design feedback, and then applying that into the new design and refining it. Do you get feedback from team riders or anything like that, or is it mainly just your own feedback?
Well, here's the thing. And for whatever reason, I think it's been really tough to connect with really, like, top-level surfers. And I'm very keen to have, like, a top-level guy surf a Vulcan. I think for the most part, though, they look at it the same way a lot of people do. It's like, well, is this a novelty, or is this really for real, or are these things just ornamental? I would really like to have a proof of concept with somebody. And, you know, we come close. I worked with Daniel Jones for a little while, and I found like we were making some progress, and then he had a really bad injury, and that kind of ended that. And
he's shaping boards too, right?
Yeah, and he's shaping them, and they look rad. That's totally cool. For whatever reason, it hasn't happened. But you have to be careful with that. Like, you really have to know what your market is. And I feel like I really know what my market is. And if you're getting feedback from, like, you know, a professional level guy with the idea that you're gonna focus your effort in building a board specifically for him, well, guess what, man? It's not gonna be practical for the rest of the 98% of the people that, you know, are struggling to even get into a wave.
So true.
So that can be a tremendous folly. And not only that, like, you know, you want to build, like, a high-performance board, man, understand that, like, by the time that, let's say you do build, like, the ultimate high-performance surfboard, okay, first off, take a look at your competition, all right, and then realize by the time the average surfer, well, he's no longer average, but by the time a surfer gets to the ability that he can fully exercise the capabilities of that high-performance board, dude, he's not paying anything for it.
Right.
Okay? So now where's your market? You got to understand, like, all these things. And this goes back to what we were talking about in terms of, like, you know, this being a business and in running that way and knowing who your market is and where you're going. Like, you got to have, like, you got to know what your plan is, know where you're going, and, like, revisit that constantly and, like, stick to your guns. And, yeah, that can be a big waste of time.
Well, so the flip side of that question is, do you ride anybody else's boards?
Yeah, so, you know, I work with a number of different people. I've narrowed it down to, like, a small group of people that they're like me. They don't build a lot of boards. The boards that they do build are very important boards. And, you know, I like that because nothing that I've ever done has been about mass production. It's always been about perfection. I have a massive investment in achieving perfection. I have a tremendous interest in producing something, in how we talked earlier, in isolating certain principles, in producing something exactly the same, holding all their factors constant and changing one variable. Okay, in finding out how that one variable affects, you know, the overall equation.
Mm-hmm.
So in helping other people who have a like mind that understand that, I think being a successful shaper today, being like a modern shaper, incorporates using all the tools in the box. I'm talking about your planner, your screens, if it's, you know, CAD CAM, the machine, whatever. We're evaluating parameters now that, like, you could never do by hand. I'm not saying that, like, one is better than the other. I'm saying that it's important to have a knowledge of all the tools in the box.
Sure.
So I've ridden Ryan Birch's boards.
Oh, okay. I saw one in the office over there.
Yeah, exactly. That was one we Ryan shaped. And it's as far as I know, it's one of the few, if not the only, EPS epoxy stringerless birches. And I love the board. It's phenomenal. I mean, it isn't just that Ryan's a phenomenal surfer. They're fantastic boards, too.
Sure.
Recently started working with Derek Disney. And he's got some great ideas. He's got some really cool ideas.
Is he shaping?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know. Most people don't. He's really, like, low-key, right? And overall, I'm not sure what his ambition is, how industrious it is, but he's got some really cool ideas.
Hmm.
And I brought in one of his boards. I'm like, dude, can I try that? And something totally different than what I would have made. And the concave was insane. I'm talking, like, you know, Maurice Cole, like, on steroids. It's just nuts. But the thing was, it was rad. I mean, it was way too small for me, but, you know, once I got it into some good waves, it was like, whoa, this is pretty cool. So, yeah, you learn a lot.
His approach to surfing is so unique that I could see him exploring extreme design elements.
Yeah, and he's got this cool flex tail that he does. And although the board I surfed didn't have that feature, talking to him about, you know, doing me a board, he's been pretty busy. I think he's back, and then he's leaving pretty quick here on a trip, so hopefully I can get a shape in there somewhere along the line. So yeah, I surfed those different boards, but not a lot, honestly.
Okay.
Just a few people. I'd surfed early on to Daniel Thompson's boards, and I'll just say right now, you know, I was hugely influenced by Daniel. I was so impressed. That relationship kind of went horribly wrong, but I was nevertheless influenced by him, and I think that he's a phenomenal shaper, and he's got tremendous ideas.
A phenomenal surfer, too.
He's a phenomenal surfer.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about he's a guy who could ride anything, so it's kind of like his boards, they look great because he's shredding on them, you know?
Yeah.
So over the years, obviously, now enough people have ridden the boards to where you can vet how they work for the average surfer.
Yeah.
But early on, it's like, damn.
Yeah.
No kidding. Like,
yeah.
His boards look incredible.
Yeah, totally.
If you could have a board shaped by anybody on the planet, like, what would you have made for yourself and by whom?
Gary Linden has done, you know, a number of these balsa and agave guns. You know, I worked on one of the agave ones, kind of made me sick. Maybe like an agave gun, just because, like, I know I don't like working with the material, but I think they're amazing once they're made. And,
yeah.
I'm fascinated by, like, the big wave stuff because it's something I'll never do.
Really?
Yeah, but I would.
In terms of surfing or building?
No, in terms of surfing.
Yeah.
And I don't venture into that realm. I don't claim to be a, you know, big wave guy. So, you know, but I'm fascinated with the boards and, you know, the design principles. And I've worked with a number of guys that, you know, build boards for the big wave tour. So I would say either one of Gary's boards, one of his balsas or one of the Gabis, or, you know, I remember a few years back, Billy made that Redwood gun. It was pretty insane. It was amazing.
Who did?
Billy Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I would say, like, just to have something like that, just an amazing piece of craftsmanship would be incredible. I think that would probably be it.
Yeah. I've often felt like there's more room for improvement in big wave paddle boards.
Yeah.
From a design standpoint, than any other aspect of surfing.
Yeah.
You know, like, those, they're really in this little tight little corner of, like, you need a ton of foam to paddle into these waves and to go fast, but they're so immovable. You know, they're not maneuverable once you get on a wave.
Yeah.
So there's got to be design elements that we could come up with that will allow guys to do turns or whatever.
I know, and that's like they're pulling in now, you know, and they're starting to like explore that territory and explore different parts of the wave. So, yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
That's a gnarly thing, though. I mean, it's I think the development in that area is going to be really, really slow. I remember
it is.
We did a while back, it was a few years ago, we did a gun, and it had a 1-inch thick pine stringer. And while we were milling it, the stringer literally burst into flames.
What?
It was insane. It was such a fiasco. Anyways, we put so much work into this board, and I think it was for Mark Healy. Anyways, I was meant to understand it was broke like on the first wave.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
So it was just the friction that caught fire?
Yeah, and I was running coolant feed on it too, and it literally burst into flames. I couldn't believe it.
Freakish.
So then we had to mill all of that damage out, and it was just, wow, that was a process.
Wow. The design will be slow to develop because, number one, those waves don't break that often. And then, number two, who wants to take a brand new design out?
Dude, totally.
And risk their life.
Man, now you don't want to be, like, rolling the dice. No. Like, you want to go with what you know.
Like, that's sketchy.
Dude, that's really sketchy.
Yeah.
Very gnarly.
You obviously surf a lot. What is your current relationship like with surfing?
It's a management issue, because I surf like at least 3 days a week, if not 4 or 5 days a week. But I had a really serious injury 17 years ago, and it's coming home to roost now. I had my left leg amputated and surgically reattached at the knee.
What?
Yeah.
And, was it a surf accident?
No, it was a motorcycle accident.
Oh, okay.
I've had five total reconstructions, 3 vascular surgeries. It's been a long, long, long road. My knee's pretty much shot, and right now I exist on a Synvisc and cortisone every 3 months, just so I can you know keep doing it. So it's kind of a tough one. It's a management issue.
Yeah. That's still a lot of surfing, though.
Yeah, it is. I need to understand, like, when I surf, though, like, all the forces, I need to know exactly what forces are going to be applied to my knee at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still out there, and it's awesome. And, of course, you know, we know that that's an integral part of doing this.
Yeah.
At least in my definition.
We opened up the conversation by talking about how much your influence has grown based on Instagram.
Yes.
Who do you follow? Who do you like on Instagram?
Within the surf industry or just in general?
Shoot, I'd be curious at both, actually.
Yeah, in the surf industry, like I obviously follow like all the people that I'm friends with, like Ryan and Derek and my friend Nick, Corey Graham, Ash Ward. Davey Sky, he's doing some amazing epoxy boards. They're just so tight looking. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people I willfully ignore, honestly.
Yeah.
Outside, like, I don't know, I'm super interested in, like, the movie industry. Like, I follow these really cool accounts for special effects. And these guys that make all the crazy, like, horror stuff up in Hollywood, that's rad. I'm fully into that.
I didn't know. You're really into movies?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you feel about surf films? Has there been, it's kind of been a lament of mine on this show where it's just like, dude, I grew up loving surf film.
Right.
And now stuff sucks.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I tuned out of it.
Because, yeah, me too.
I was seeing a lot of stuff that I wasn't interested in it. I felt like it was kind of spazzy and like it just... I don't know. It was surfing that I really couldn't relate to. I just saw a movie, though, that I thought was amazing. And it was by Deuce. It was South of Cyan. And I just liked the whole vibe of it, you know. And it was, I don't know, it just, I liked the surfing. I liked the fact that the two guys that were in it, like, had a very broad repertoire.
I mean, I'm talking fishes to mid-lengths to longboards to body surfing to finless even.
You know, south of Siam?
South to Siam.
South to Siam.
Yeah, I watched it on Apple TV. As a matter of fact, I bought the movie and I've been telling people, dude, it was so funny because I was telling all these people, like, yeah, this movie is amazing. You got to watch this. It's just so cool. It's really, it's soul. And, like, you know, this, I don't want to make it sound like an ad for Deuce, but I mean, it was a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it made you want to get out there and surf. It was so cool. And the adventure, you know, and the exploration. And I saw a guy paddle out at the point, and he was wearing a Deuce wetsuit. And I said, hey, you know, how do you like that thing? He's, oh, it's pretty cool. And it's like, yeah. So, well, yeah, I work for Deuce. I said, no shit, I just watched that movie. It was incredible. And I've been telling everybody about it. So I don't know, I would check that out. I really was impressed.
I will check it out. Who are the two surfers?
Let's see.
It's, I think that their Deuce's influence is greater maybe in Australia and Bali and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, their stuff seems huge, but for some reason doesn't, I don't know, doesn't show up in Southern California very often, even though they have a shop in, like, Venice.
Right. Yeah, and that's where this guy was from.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. They had dirt bikes in it, too. I mean, this movie was, like, tailor-made for me.
Okay, Harrison Roach and Zy Norris. I don't know who Zy Norris is. I know Harrison Roach, though. That guy shreds.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really impressive. And, like, just the atmosphere of the movie was really cool. And it had a very a really chill kind of romantic atmosphere of, like, exploring and, like, discovery. And I think the premise was, it's, like, trying to, you know, explore and be outside of, like, the confines of, like, the guardrails of life.
Yeah.
You know, and getting out there and having these experiences, like, outside of the world of foam corner protectors and fire retardant paper. So it was really cool. I liked it.
Yep.
You know?
That's kind of what the world is outside of Southern California.
Yeah.
Our little Southern California bubble here. We forget, but that is what it's like out there.
Yeah.
The final question I always have for everybody interviewed is just, what was the last surfboard that you rode?
The last surfboard I rode was a one that it was a prototype that I designed for a trip I just took down to El Salvador. It's a 5.7 variant fish based off my Hexafish. So more pulled in, more like a rocket fish, the jet tail. And I wanted it to surf and bigger, like, conditions, and, you know, for points. So it was perfect for El Salvador. I surfed it in everything from, you know, waist high to overhead, and it was a great board. So I'm going to be adding that either to the Vulcan lineup, or I was recently approached by a newly formed company that is wanting to pull in a collective of shapers to design boards, and I'm looking really seriously at this, and could be another vehicle for my shapes, so I'm stoked about that.
Along those lines, how does a listener get a Vulcan?
You call me.
Perfect.
Everything is by custom order. I work with very few shops. So, yeah, call or email. You'll speak directly with me. There's really not much that I can't build. I have a few things I won't do, but, you know, by and large, like, really about, like, trying different things and different laminations, and yeah.
Perfect. Dane, of course, did not leave his phone number there, but you can find it on his website, surfvulcan.com, or, of course, on Instagram, at VulcanSurf, and then I'll have all of that stuff on surfsplendorpodcast.com, so you can just link to it from our website. Check out all the boards that we talked about, the convex construction, the surf films, all of it. It's on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And also, feel free to leave a comment there for Dane. If you comment, I'll make sure that he sees it. And yeah, like I always say, this conversation isn't just between myself and the guest. communal thing. So engage there, or you can feel free to engage on Instagram too, at Surf Splendor. Makes it a great place to share it with friends too, because you could just tag them or whatever. And then, of course, on Instagram, if you rate and review the show on Instagram, that helps other people to find it, which in turn helps the show to grow, which in turn attracts bigger and bigger guests. We get guys like Dane who actually want to participate and devote an hour of their life to this show because it helps spread their influence. So help this show to grow, and we will keep getting awesome guests like that. All right. Thank you so much. The other way that you can help this show grow is just by making a donation. We have a $5 monthly subscription that you could sign up for, or just one-time donation. Anything. Any little bit helps. All right, that's enough of my pandering. I'll be back next week with a new episode of Spit with Scott Bass. If you haven't already subscribed to that feed, do it right now. Open up your podcasting app that you're listening in, search for Spit, and then click subscribe. That way you can ensure that you find all future episodes, because it eventually will only be available on that feed, no longer on this feed. All right. Thanks for everything. This is David Scales. Until I connect with you next week, just reminding you, get back in the ocean, get a couple of waves, and shred on.